Hello, and welcome to my podcast. Today's episode is one from the archives. This was originally published in two parts on September 25th and 26th of 2020. As it was originally made for YouTube, there may be references to visual materials. Please enjoy. Hello, and welcome to my channel. Vice Rhino here. Today, we're looking at another Matt Powell video. That's right, Matt Powell still exists. Well, barely. His channel doesn't get all that much traffic nowadays, and I know a bunch of you guys will go watch the original, so I thought I'd help the little tyke out and give him a little view boost. I mean, I'd rather not, all things being equal, but I don't think a one-time blip from me will equate to any permanent growth for his channel, so what the hey. Anyway, this video is an excerpt from a podcast in which Powell claims to have debunked the entire atheist community, the whole thing, in one fell swoop. Well, it's been a good run, but let's see what's causing my imminent retirement.
Yep. So let's talk about the universe, shall we? The universe as we know it was created by what is known as the Big Bang, or so we believe.
Okay, so it looks like Matt is doing a response video to this Anna Campbell person. Which, fine, whatever, but if you're going to be claiming to debunk the entire atheist community, wouldn't it be best to start off with, you know, an atheist? I watched through her video. It is her explaining why she believes in God, but doesn't think of God in the same way as Christians do, instead referring to God as the ultimate source for everything. So, like, a deistic God. Definitely not an atheist. And if you're looking to debunk something like the Big Bang, would you not want to go to a scientific source for information on what the Big Bang is, rather than a YouTuber? Like, if some creationist were to go through my channel and find that I am wrong about most of what I say about evolution, that would not prove evolution wrong, that would prove me wrong. Now, this isn't going to happen, because I take great care in making sure that I am presenting as accurate a view of the science as it is possible for me to do, so you might find the odd mistake here and there, but I am confident that the big points that I've made are all accurate.
The Big Bang is the belief that the universe essentially came from nothing. And that's hard to understand because how could something so enormous and, you know, significant and just magical come from nothing?
See? That is one view, sure, but the real answer is that we don't know where the universe came from. It's possible that the singularity has existed for as long as time has existed. It's possible that it did come from nothing and that nothing is just so unstable that it could not continue to exist, and so the universe began. It could be neither of these. The truth is, we don't know for sure. But to just say that the Big Bang is the belief that the universe expanded out of nothing is a bit oversimplified. But you also have to take into consideration her target audience. She is a lifestyle vlogger. She's not talking to people who follow her specifically for the scientific knowledge bombs she's dropping. This is just a video of her explaining her reason for believing in her version of God. And kudos to her, in her original video, she actually does a decent job of explaining it without making too many errors. Her biggest mistake is presenting the everything from nothing hypothesis as if the scientific community is unified on the matter. And even then, she kinda hedges a little bit on that, so she does pretty good with the science, all things considered.
It's funny how she words this.
No, it's not. She's talking about the higher power that she believes in. Using the word magical to describe the universe is how she kind of gets there.
She says, you know, I just don't understand how, you know, this world could come from nothing. That's because it's not understandable, because it's not true. Truth is things that we can understand.
Truth is not determined by our ability to understand it. To a baby, before they develop object permanence, they are incapable of understanding that when they can't see someone, that person still exists. Does this mean that it is literally not true that people still exist when babies can't see them, since it is completely impossible for a baby to understand object permanence? Of course not. I don't understand differential equations, so I guess they must not be true. You don't understand basic logic, so I guess logic is out the window now too. Oh, and fun fact, nobody really understands how airplanes fly. The math works, so we can design the most efficient wings and all that, but the actual mechanism is a bit of a mystery. Bernoulli's theorem of fluid dynamics is usually the favorite explanation, where the air acts like a fluid and moves faster over a curved surface, creating a low-pressure area just above the curved surface. And this does happen, but we don't know why it moves faster. When I was in flight school, the instructor explained that the air molecule has to go faster in order to arrive at the trailing edge of the wing at the same time as the air molecules that went under the wing on the flat side. This creates a low pressure system above the wing, creating lift. But why does the air molecule have to meet up with its counterpart at the same time? What causes that? We haven't figured that one out yet. And on top of that, it doesn't explain how airplanes are still able to fly upside down. When they are upside down, the low pressure should still exist on the same side of the wing, thereby pushing the plane down to the ground. And yet, lift still keeps the plane aloft, for unknown reasons. One of the other ideas is that Newton's laws of motion are responsible. The wing of the plane is angled such that it pushes on the lower air, and the air pushes back with an equal and opposite force. The critical factor here is the angle of attack, the angle at which the wing intercepts the air. This works for wings of all shapes and orientations, and so is actually a better explanation than Bernoulli's theorem, even though Bernoulli's theorem still seems to be the prevalent one. But it fails to account for the low pressure that is created above the wing, even in scenarios that Bernoulli's theorem wouldn't predict. So neither explanation is complete, and we don't know why. There are a couple of other explanations which seek to kind of combine the two, but they have problems of their own. So, we don't understand how planes fly. Therefore, with Matt's definition of truth here being things that we can understand, it is not true that planes can fly. And yet they do. Therefore, Matt must be wrong.
Truth is what we can demonstrate, what the facts are.
Truth is that which comports with reality. What the facts are might be an acceptable alternate phrasing, but our ability or inability to demonstrate it does not necessarily line up with how well something actually comports with reality. This is where the scientific method comes in. So we can make predictions based on what we think is true, test those predictions, and weed out predictions that don't hold up. We predict, based on certain math, that a plane with these dimensions will be able to fly. We test that, first in wind tunnels, then in test planes, and if the prediction holds up, then it turns out that it was true all along that planes with that shape would be able to fly. The fact that we don't understand exactly how it flies is completely irrelevant to the fact that it does fly.
And so, you know, I love it when YouTubers put out videos like this because it really demonstrates how, and even atheists that put out videos like this, it really demonstrates how what they believe is flawed as far as the scientific method goes.
I mean, so far, we're 48 seconds in. Only 30 seconds of that has been you talking, and yet, in such a short time, you have already demonstrated a clear lack of understanding of logic, philosophy, and the scientific method. In fact, you've mangled your definition of truth so badly that I don't think even you would agree with it if you actually were to sit down and think about it for a bit. After all, do you not believe that God is the ultimate source of truth or something along those lines? Truth is absolute. There aren't different truths for different people. There is one immutable truth. That's my understanding of your position, but the statement truth is what we can demonstrate is not compatible with the existence of absolute truth. Because different people have different abilities, some will be able to demonstrate truth in a different way than others. Think of the analogy of the blind men feeling an elephant. Each one describes something completely different, guessing that the object that they are feeling is something that it is not. The truth is that it is an elephant. But with your definition of truth, the guy proclaiming that the elephant is like the trunk of a tree because he's only feeling its legs must be describing the elephant accurately because he is able to demonstrate that touching the elephant where he was touching it demonstrates that it is like the trunk of a tree. But of course, this is absurd. The whole point of that story is to explain why different truths can appear different while all being simultaneously true.
So, you know, just to debunk this using scientific fact, the first law of thermodynamics states that matter cannot be created nor destroyed.
Not quite. The first law of thermodynamics states that energy cannot be created nor destroyed in an isolated system. Matter is basically frozen energy, to use an oversimplified analogy. So the law does apply to matter by extension, but matter can appear to be created or destroyed if we ignore this fact. So the more accurate phrasing of the first law of thermodynamics is the energy version, because that includes both energy and matter, no matter how you slice it. I prefer my matter sliced into segments, like pie.
It's known as the conservation of matter and energy.
You can just leave it at energy. That includes both. But given the fact that you apparently think that there is air in space that the sun uses for fuel?
But in space, wouldn't it be a different scenario based on the fact that, you know, the space and the air in the space is much different than the air we have here?
I'm not inclined to think that you understand the link between matter and energy.
And so if at one point there was no time, space, or matter, time, space, and matter cannot magically create itself.
I don't know of anyone suggesting magic as the actual mechanism. Well, anyone that's not a creationist. Because creationists literally believe that a guy spoke the universe into existence, which is pretty much the exact description of a magical incantation. Now, sure, Anna described the universe as magical, but suggesting that magic is the actual mechanism behind the origin of the universe doesn't seem to be what she was getting at there.
There has to be an external force.
How have you demonstrated that there does, in fact, have to be an external force to kick off the Big Bang? Have you done the math or made any important observations, or are you just relying on intuition?
And so, I always like to ask atheists, do you believe that an external force created time, space, and matter, something outside of the laws of physics?
I don't know. It's possible that space and energy existed before time, and that something about that combination caused time to begin. It's possible that a true nothing is unstable and so cannot continue, thereby bringing space, time, and energy into existence. It's possible that something else is the explanation. But one thing is certain. The physics of the early universe are not intuitive. So us expecting that our intuition, which evolved to help us make quick decisions in our macro-scaled lives, would apply equally well on the quantum level, where we have to go in order to make sense of the early universe, is just silly. As far as the laws of physics go, it is possible that they wouldn't apply at such scales. It is also possible that our understanding of the laws of physics are incomplete, and so they do apply, but not in the way that we yet understand. And, of course, there's also the fact that when you add up all the energy and matter in the universe, between the positive energy of temperature and mass and the negative energy of gravity, the total energy of the universe appears to be zero, which would mean that the universe coming into existence out of nothing does not violate thermodynamics at all, as the zero total energy of the universe is the same as the zero total energy of nothing.
Or, do you believe that time, space, and matter popped into existence naturalistically and magically?
Those two things are pretty much opposites. If it's naturalistic, it is not magical, and vice versa, pretty much by definition.
Because if it was a naturalistic creation, it would have been a magic act.
That statement demonstrates your complete lack of understanding of philosophical or methodological naturalism.
So, you know, you have to ask the question, what is magical? Somebody creating the universe, or matter and energy creating itself from nothing?
Somebody creating the universe, obviously. A person says an incantation, and now poof, fully formed stuff exists. That is magic, plain and simple. But mathematically consistent explanations of how space and energy could have existed before time, thereby rendering the universe functionally eternal, sounds more naturalistic even if we don't quite understand all the details yet.
And so, you know, this YouTuber here, she seems like she might be moldable. She seems like she might be honest.
Moldable seems like a gross way to describe someone. Like, it's a good thing that your personality is such that I feel like I might be able to shape you into being who I think you should be. It sounds creepy, Matt. Maybe try not to be creepy.
And she seems to be fairly sincere, and so hopefully she'll... Anna, if you're watching this video, you know...
Yeah, sorry to break it to you, Matt, but she almost certainly has not and will never watch either your video or my video.
However, we do know that there was a moment of creation, of course. And as I said, it was once believed that our entire universe, not just Earth, not just our solar system, not just our galaxy, everything, our entire universe was once this big.
The actual size estimates vary. I have heard everything from the size of a period in Times New Roman 12-point font to the size of a grapefruit. But the point is, all of the energy that makes up the universe now was compressed into a very small area.
And that is what scientists say. And that's what a lot of people will say about the Big Bang Theory, is that everything was condensed down to an infinitesimal amount of space smaller than a single proton.
Again, I've heard different estimates for the actual size, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. The singularity is more a function of math than anything else. The singularity occurs whenever the property of an object approaches infinity. It is possible that there wasn't even a singularity. One model for the universe is a bouncing cosmology model, similar to the old idea of a universe that goes through cycles, bouncing back and forth between expansion and contraction, but not quite identical to it. This model does away with the singularity altogether. And even better, it makes testable predictions about what kinds of gravitational wave observations we could expect as remnants of older universes if it turns out to be correct. So while there is currently no evidence to support it, it at least has a path to providing direct evidence rather than just mathematics, which is what all the other models rely on.
And then in a billionth of a billionth of a billionth of a second, it went from the size of that tiny point to something billions of miles across. And so, you know, water, for example, can only be compressed down to a certain point. It can hardly be compressed at all.
Firstly, you can compress water, but all else being equal, liquids are less compressible than gases. Secondly, nobody is suggesting that water was present in the singularity. If the singularity ends up being what existed before the Big Bang, there was no water. It would have been pure energy. Eventually, after the Big Bang, nucleosynthesis began and some hydrogen, helium, lithium, and beryllium started forming, but there still wouldn't have been water, as oxygen wouldn't have formed for another few hundred million years, needing stellar fusion to make it. So, yes, water can compress. And no, this fact is not important to Big Bang cosmology because water wasn't there.
And so there are 326 million trillion gallons of water here on Earth alone. And so, you know, is it really rational? Is it really logical? Is it really scientific to say that 326 million trillion gallons of water was condensed down to a space this small?
No, it's not. And that's not what is being said. That is an erroneous conclusion that you have drawn from the commonly repeated line about the whole universe being compressed into a single dot. That line is not technically incorrect, but it leaves out the fact that it was not the stuff that we are familiar with in the universe today that was being compressed in its current form down into a small dot. The dot would not have been actual stuff. Molecules and atoms didn't exist then. And unless you deny the existence of black holes, you already know this sort of thing. A black hole has a singularity at its center, an area with a mathematically infinite density. Anything that goes into a black hole gets compressed into a tiny dot, much more compressed than it could be under normal circumstances.
I would definitely venture to say that, you know, if you truly believe this, if you believe what you're saying, that all the matter was condensed down to an infinitesimal amount of space that we observe here in the universe, all of this matter, I would really encourage you to re-examine your position on that.
And scientists are constantly re-evaluating their position on that. There are a few different solutions to relativity that leave us with a Big Bang that didn't start as a singularity. The solution that gets us to the singularity is known as the Schwarzschild solution. But there's also an entire class of solutions to relativity known as the Friedman-Robertson-Walker solutions, which do not end up at a singularity. And of course, there is the previously mentioned study which suggests a kind of bouncing cosmology as a solution that also doesn't end up at a singularity. Thing is, though, whatever else happens, the cosmology basically has to match up with the theory of relativity. Relativity is so well demonstrated at this point that it is almost unthinkable that something would completely replace it. Quantum gravity may supersede it in the same way relativity superseded Newtonian gravity, but relativity will still hold true in the scenarios that it applies to. Relativity as a theory has made many predictions well in advance of our ability to test those predictions, the most drastic example of which was the prediction of gravitational waves, which weren't actually observed until about a century later. There's also the way gravity bends light and the cosmic microwave background radiation. All of these were predictions that could have demonstrated a fatal flaw in relativity, but they didn't. We use relativity whenever we use a GPS, and without correcting for time dilation, the GPS satellites would place you in the wrong location. And relativity is one of the ways we have figured out the age of the universe, by deriving the Friedman equations from the general relativity equations and then solving for T. So, regardless of the original form the universe took, whether it was a singularity or something else, the Big Bang did happen. And it happened 13.7 billion years ago. And scientists are constantly reevaluating these conclusions and publishing their work for other scientists to scrutinize. What work are you doing in the field of cosmology? Have you managed to come up with a solution to general relativity that somehow does not end up with a Big Bang billions of years ago? Can you do what every third grader knows how to do and show your work? Or are you just making assertions based on your intuition and hoping that nobody will check up on your claims?
We'll go ahead and continue here.
You know, the chances of just a mega bang or explosion creating, you know, what's essential for life, you know, living creatures is just slim to none for me.
The chances of it happening are actually pretty much impossible to calculate. There are too many unknown variables, and we only have one example of it having happened, and no examples of it not having happened. So in hindsight, the chances of it happening appear to be 100%, but that's probably more of a result of our lack of data than anything else.
It seems unbelievable if that.
It definitely is unbelievable, because there's no truth to it.
If there is no truth to it, then why is the theory of general relativity held up so well over the years? Why has it made so many testable predictions that, when tested, turn out to be accurate? Why do we need to correct for relativity when programming GPS satellites if there's no truth to it? Why does Mercury's orbit not obey Newtonian physics if there's no truth to relativity? The age that we have calculated for the universe is a direct result of general relativity, so if you want to claim that the universe is a mere 6,000 years old, then you have to demonstrate some fatal flaw in the math behind relativity. Considering you don't even appear to understand what the singularity is...
326 million trillion gallons of water was condensed down to a space this small?
I'm just going to go ahead and assume that you don't have enough of an understanding of the math behind relativity to show that it is wrong.
See, if there was any truth to it, it would be believable.
Why are you arguing for relative truth? Different people have differing levels of credulity. Some people will believe some things that most of us consider pretty unbelievable. To them, it was believable. Does this mean that it was true for them? How easy it is for a human brain to believe something has no effect on whether or not that thing is actually true.
Like I said earlier, the truth is what we can show to be true.
Okay, so the Bible is not true, then. There are parts of it where the authors got the name of a place right or the name of a historical figure, but the majority of the events described in the Bible are not described anywhere outside of the Bible. Can you show Jesus' resurrection to be true? I find that story to be pretty unbelievable. I have never seen a convincing demonstration of the truth of that story. Since you can't show it to be true, then by your own definition of truth, it is therefore most definitely not true. Same goes for your creation account. It is pretty unbelievable that a magic dude spoke things into existence, created man out of dust, created woman out of the man's ribs, and then made a magic tree that will give you knowledge through some unknown mechanism just by eating from it, and then forbidding the man and woman from eating from it, and then having a talking snake with legs show up to convince them that it was okay to eat from it, and then the dust man and rib woman got kicked out of the garden so they can't access the other magic tree that will give them eternal life, and then placed a cherubim and a floating fire sword at the entrance of the garden to keep the people out. That's a pretty unbelievable story, if you ask me.
Truth is that which corresponds to reality.
Which is a definition that conflicts with your earlier definition of that which we can show to be true. Reality is real, regardless of what the people in reality can show about it. But one thing we have shown to be real, repeatedly, for the last century, is the theory of general relativity. You have yet to do anything to show it to be incorrect, so despite your protestations, it does appear to correspond to reality, and so it fits both of your definitions of truth, making the statement, "the universe is 13.7 billion years old," appear to be a true statement, no matter which of your definitions of truth you decide to use.
And so, you know, if the Big Bang was based on fact, then you wouldn't say, oh, this is so unbelievable.
And there you're going back to human credulity as your measurement of truth. Our ability or inability to intuitively understand something has no relevance to the truth of that thing.
But since it's based in a fantasy, you will say, it is unbelievable that this could be the case.
It's based in math, which has held up to scrutiny and physical observation of phenomena that were predicted by the math for over a century now. But I'd be willing to bet that Matt here doesn't even know that there is a connection between the Big Bang and relativity. He probably just has some vague idea of what special relativity is and has no inkling of the dots that connect special relativity to general relativity to the Big Bang. Also, remember, the woman that Matt is responding to appears to be a deist. This is her video explaining why she believes in God. So, yeah, she agrees that it is unbelievable that the Big Bang happened all by itself with no supernatural intervention. She just isn't going so far as to deny the science in order to stick her predetermined beliefs in like you are, Matt.
You'll claim that it's unbelievable because you yourself are aware that this is something that was created as a fantasy, just as Charles Darwin said that he was afraid he was living in a fantasy.
I'm not sure if Darwin ever actually said that. You know, I'm sure there is some quote that kind of looks like it's saying that when you take it out of context, as you like to do.
Well, I don't see anything wrong with quote mining.
But even if Darwin said exactly that and meant it in exactly the way you are presenting, it doesn't matter. We know evolution is true now, not because of what Darwin said about it, but because of what we have since discovered about it. If you were to travel back in time and get irrefutable proof that Darwin became a young Earth creationist right before he died, evolution would still be true. And of course, since you don't see a problem with quote mining, I'm sure you won't mind me playing this clip from Science Falsely So-Called.
Hey, the Bible says that God made us in his own image, and that's why a lot of these school shootings happen.
There you have it. School shootings happen because God made us in his image. You heard it directly from Matt Powell's mouth.
The Big Bang itself is obviously a fantasy made up by people who were very superstitious.
Well, the guy credited with first putting the pieces together to come up with the Big Bang theory was a priest. So, sure, I'd actually agree that being a priest does mean you're probably at least a little bit superstitious. Hell, the definition of superstition is excessively credulous belief in and reverence for supernatural beings. By that definition, you, Matt, are superstitious. And yet, you use the word as if it's a pejorative.
And didn't understand how the world works, or what the universe is all about, or what the scientific method is about.
Yep. Clearly, the first person to ever derive the Hubble-Lemaître law, which describes the fact that galaxies are moving away from each other at speeds proportional to their distance, didn't understand how the universe works, or have an understanding of the scientific method. And did I mention that he was also a research associate in astronomy at Cambridge University, and worked alongside Arthur Eddington, whose observation of a 1919 solar eclipse was the first experimental confirmation of the theory of relativity? Mr. Air in Space here clearly knows the science a lot better than one of the preeminent scientists of the 20th century.
And so, we'll go ahead and continue on here.
It is proven that the universe was much smaller. It is theorized that it was actually the size of a grain of sand at one point. A grain of sand. But that small grain of sand that was once our universe had to have enough energy to set off that moment of creation.
So, obviously, you say that nothing, that this little grain of sand, which was next to nothing at that point, would have had to have energy to be able to explode.
Yep, that's what she said. She seems to have a pretty good grasp of the science behind it, which is a lot more than I can say for you, Matt.
Well, the conservation of matter and energy says that matter cannot be created or destroyed, and that goes with energy as well. Energy can only be converted. And so what you're saying is that magically, energy created itself, or energy came into being from nothing, which we know cannot happen scientifically.
Yeah, this is another example of Matt being a dishonest little shit. I mean, firstly, he's wrong about the science, which no surprise there, and I went into more specific detail about that in part one, so I'm not going to rehash it here, but he is addressing her as if she is making an argument from the atheist position. She's not. Matt has deliberately cut out her several references to a higher power, what she refers to as the source and the higher energy. She seems to be a deist, believing in a higher power that created everything and then allowing it to play out on its own. So this is Matt Powell demonstrating conclusively, once again, that he is not just an ignoramus, he is also a liar. And if you've been watching my channel for a while, you'll know that this is not an accusation I throw around lightly. I usually give the benefit of the doubt to creationists even when it's not really warranted. I start with the assumption that they really believe what they are saying, but through motivated reasoning have come to the wrong conclusion. But in Matt's case, he has shown every indication of knowing that he is misrepresenting people, which leads me to question if he really is as stupid as he makes himself out to be, or if it's all some grift or con to him. This is what happens, Matt. You show a willingness, even an eagerness, to be deceptive, and it calls into question the sincerity of your beliefs that I would normally just accept.
It is scientifically impossible to go from nothing to something. So only the lawgiver of the first law of thermodynamics could operate outside of the laws of thermodynamics.
Why? Why does he get a pass? Why does there have to be a lawgiver? Thermodynamics are not prescriptive. It's simply our description of how the universe appears to operate. There is no indication that the laws of physics need someone to enforce them.
And it changed the laws of physics. Laws of physics, Jeb.
To bring matter and energy into existence. That is scientific, that is logical, and that is rational.
Is it scientific? Do you have scientific support for the idea that the laws of physics need an enforcer or a creator? As far as logical is concerned, the cosmological arguments all either rely on special pleading to wiggle out of the question of how God came to be, or they don't even get you to a God, just a cause. And rational just means it's based on logic. The definition doesn't even say whether the logic has to be valid or sound, just that it is based on logic. So, technically speaking, you could say that a belief that a full moon causes people to act crazy is a rational belief, because I see people acting crazy on a full moon sometimes. People act crazy when the moon is full, ergo the full moon causes people to act crazy. Of course, this is almost entirely the result of confirmation bias, but a logical syllogism can get you to that conclusion, therefore it is rational. And if you disagree with my assessment of how something is determined to be rational, stating that my belief that flawed logic can get you to a rational belief is irrational, then let me just reassure you that I used logic to determine this definition for rational. So, by definition, it can't be irrational.
Yeah, you know, when you put it this way, I really hope if there's anyone watching that is an evolutionist, I hope you listen to what Matt's saying. I know he says it really kind of uses big words and he says it all fancy, but...
If you think that Matt's description of anything is too technical or the words are too big or it's difficult to understand, then you need to go back to high school or, you know, finish it. I know some high school students watch my channel. Shout out to the teenagers in my audience who know science better than the guy who was just described as using big fancy sciencey words.
What he's saying, if you break it down, I mean, it makes complete sense.
It makes complete sense. If you start off with a religious belief that lines up with Matt's, and you don't do any digging into anything he says, not even superficially. Dig any deeper than the surface, and it all falls apart. What was that the Bible said about building foundations on sand?
And it doesn't make sense to believe that everything came from nothing, just like Dr. Kelvin said.
And that's not necessarily what cosmologists believe. The truth is, we don't really know what came before the Big Bang. It is possible that everything did come from nothing and that the total energy of the universe adds up to zero, thereby allowing us to have a universe come from nothing without violating thermodynamics. It is also possible that space existed before time and so was effectively eternal, as much as eternal can mean anything when there's no time. It's also possible that the bouncing cosmology model that I mentioned in part one is accurate. But the truth is that we don't know. And us not knowing the answer does not make your overly simplistic fantastical account involving talking snakes, a naked dude naming all the animals in a single day, and a physically impossible global flood the correct answer. The idea that we don't know, therefore any answer you give must be true, is just the tired old god of the gaps.
How could all that water, like you were pointing out, come from a single proton? It just...
Oh my god, you didn't even understand Powell's misunderstanding of the singularity. The singularity was not a single proton. Nobody thinks that. All water did not originate from a single proton. Go back to high school and pay attention this time.
Yeah. Come on. It just sounds so stupid when you put it, Matt.
That I agree with, fully. Everything that comes out of Matt's mouth sounds so stupid. Maybe he is stupid, or maybe he's just deceptively trying to appear stupid for whatever reason, but yeah, that is the statement in this video that I agree with the most.
It's like Hitler said. He said, make the lie big, make it simple, keep on saying it, and eventually they will believe it.
That seems to be the mantra that Matt lives his life by. I imagine he says that to himself in the mirror every morning as a self-motivational speech.
So it's a big lie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a huge lie, and people do believe it.
If people do believe it, then that means, by definition, it is believable. And therefore, according to one of Matt's definitions of truth, it is also true.
You know, the law of cause and effect states that for everything that comes into existence, there is a cause.
Nope, it sure doesn't. In fact, there doesn't seem to be anything scientific that is called the law of cause and effect. If you search for the law of cause and effect, what you'll find is a bunch of New Age spirituality websites telling you that the law of cause and effect is about how you need to put positive vibrations out into the universe in order to cause the universe to send more positive vibrations back to you, or some such nonsense.
Well, we know that the universe came into existence billions of years ago, according to an evolutionist.
No, we don't. We know that the universe began expanding 13.7 billion years ago. What came before that is still a mystery, and anyone claiming to know for certain is mistaken.
Now let's just pretend that that's true. Even if that were the case, the cause of the universe, if it created time, it must be outside of time.
Why? How have you determined that? Come on, Matt, show your work.
If it created matter, it must be outside of matter.
And that one we know is incorrect. E equals mc² is a demonstration that energy can create matter. Have you proven Einstein's most famous equation wrong? If so, again, show your work. You'll go down in history. I mean, every time Einstein was wrong about something, they make a big deal about it and like, oh, Einstein was wrong about X. But to fundamentally prove this particular equation wrong would secure your place in the science books of history for the rest of human civilization.
If it created space, it must be able to operate outside of space.
Okay, but can it operate outside of the air in space?
The space and the air in the space is much different than the air we have here.
Those three attributes are the attributes that we attribute to God.
Okay, for argument's sake, let's just assume that you were correct so far. Why do we attribute these attributes to God? How does that follow? How does the existence of those attributes lead from sufficient cause to, specifically, the God of the Bible? It's an unsubstantiated logical leap.
And so this is logic 101. This is science 101.
No, it's Hovind 101. Subtitle, How to Grift Like a Pro.
So to ask the question, who created God, is like asking, who created the thing that created everything and that by definition cannot be created?
It depends on how the question is asked. If it's in response to one of the cosmological arguments that just plunks God down as an unsubstantiated block to an infinite regress, then asking why God gets to be that block is a perfectly valid question, and asking who or what created God is a tool used to demonstrate the special pleading used to get God as an answer, because those forms of the argument have to use special pleading to make the premises of that argument somehow not apply to God. But if you use one of the cosmological arguments that don't even successfully get you to God, like the Kalam, then they leave you with an unknown cause. In that scenario, yes, asking who created God is nonsensical because we didn't even get to God. And also, how have you determined that the thing that created everything cannot be created by definition? That sounds suspiciously like getting into the ontological argument, where if you define God as being a necessary, maximally great being, then that proves that God exists because necessary beings exist by definition. Now, before we go on, I just want to play a quick clip from Anna's video. This is the exact video that Matt is responding to here, and it's a part that Matt skipped over on purpose.
So do I believe in God? Yes. But do I believe in, you know, the typical religious type of man-imaged God? No. I think God, Source, is much, much higher.
So there you go. In her own words, she believes in God, just not the typical religious God.
You're not like a typical atheist that I typically deal with, and so I want to just let you know that, you know, Paul and I here on the show today, we wish the very best for you.
This woman, who has clearly stated several times throughout her video that she does believe in God, and has repeatedly explained what she means by that, is now being called an atheist by Matt. Because Matt wanted someone to explain the Big Bang for him in a way that makes it sound like it will lead to the conclusion that a god must have done it, while still presenting as someone who is against Christianity, which she explicitly stated that she is not.
If you believe in Jesus Christ or believe in whatever God or whatever it is that you believe in and you watch this video, I hope it doesn't change your mind. I want you to believe in what you believe in. This video is simply me just answering the question, do I believe in God?
So Matt dishonestly cut her video to make her appear to be an atheist, describing the Big Bang in a way that obviously makes it out to be the result of a creative force, and then he just describes her as being unlike most atheists that he deals with. It's shameful, Matt. Just utterly shameful. That's it for this one. Today's comment of the day comes to us from Bo Dan, who says, has any Christian apologist answered the question if God has the part that Adam has? If not, why say him and father? And if so, what does he do with it? As a perfect being, there should not be a part that's not used, right? Right. Adam was made in the image of God, so God has to have a dong. Which I guess means that women weren't made in the image of God. Well, for this one, it really depends on which Christian you ask. This is one of those points that they can't seem to agree on. Sometimes, of course God is male, because men are the heads of the household and churches, and God is our spiritual head. Penises have nothing to do with it. Others will say the Bible refers to God with male pronouns because the primitive people he was talking to wouldn't take a female god very seriously, which is kind of countered by just how badass some of the ancient female gods could be. And people like my mother will gleefully swap God's pronouns around at will because she doesn't care what pronouns you use for God, that just seems like a petty thing to get hung up on. Thanks for watching. Special thanks as always to my patrons, David Schinkel, Lynn Dobbs, Mark McManus, What Jesus, and all the rest, who are the lies who build the narrative that is my channel. If you'd like to be Matt Powell, you can support the channel for as little as $1 per week over at patreon.com/vicerhino. Other ways to support the channel, such as direct donation or my Amazon wishlist, are linked in the description, as well as my social media accounts and my P.O. Box address. See you next time!